Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And today, Stone Temple Pilots. I got founding member Robert DeLeo and new singer Jeff Gute. Their new studio album, Stone Temple Pilots, self-titled, comes out this Friday. It's the first with the new singer, and it rocks. It's not grunge rehash. Jeff is not trying to be Weiland. No one can be. You got to check this record out. We're going to talk about it coming up, what it was like writing it, working in the studio together, and what kind of pressure Jeff felt writing and singing with such a huge legacy band. Robert's also talking about their band's last days with Weiland, what ultimately separated them, and then how they hooked up with Linkin Park singer Chester Bennington for a couple of years. Both of them have now since passed away, and Robert's going to talk about both of them. They really miss Chester's great vibe and laugh. Lots of stories, old and new, about Stone Temple Pilots with Rob DeLeo and new singer Jeff Gute, including the incredible audition process Jeff went through. Let's get rocking right here on Talk is Jericho with Stone Temple Pilots. Crank it up. All right, so I came in here like a chicken with my head cut off. I'm late, but I have an excuse. And actually, I was at Scott Ian's house, and he said to say hi to you. Scott Ian from Anthrax.
I love Scott.
He said he loved you. He said,
sweetheart.
Tell Robert
sweetheart,
and Dean I love him.
Oh, thank you.
But what I didn't know is he lives in frickin' Topanga Canyon, which is like, you know, on the other side of the state.
Like Mars.
Exactly. So finally, I'm here, excited to see you guys. And like I said, for the first time we meet, which is strange.
Yeah.
I think we would have met somewhere before.
I know, right?
With Robert DeLeo and then, of course, the new singer, Jeff Gute.
Yes.
Which is great, man. Super exciting, especially for you guys.
Oh, man.
I mean, yeah. After the lineage of singers and the issues and kind of the sad stories.
Yeah.
How does it feel?
You know, it feels like getting back on the horse again.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Been off the horse for a while. And, you know, it's, you know, not to get too deep, but it's pretty tragic to see the outcome of, you know, the two singers we've had in our band. You know, It's tragic to see that. But good things come out of things like that. I don't know if that's really what you want to hear, Jeff, he's here for a reason. You know, he's here for a reason.
Well, you know, some of the biggest breaks I ever had in wrestling is if someone gets injured. Obviously, it's not the same thing, but someone's out for 9 months. And listen, it sucks, but it opens opportunities. And for a guy like yourself, you know, and it's interesting because I watched the ever see the Pearl Jam documentary that Cameron Crowe did?
No.
So he's talking about, you know, the guys were in Mother Love Bone and then Andrew Wood dies. And then they talk about seeing Eddie Vedder when he used to monkey bar across the stage. And they're like, if he falls and dies, like, I don't know if I can handle this again.
Yeah.
So to go through that, not just once, but twice, it's just,
like
you said, it's hard to fathom.
Yeah, but great things, like I said, I like to be positive in life. I think it's a good thing to pass on to other people on this planet, you know what I mean? And I think, you know, this is, we're here for a reason, you know?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's exciting, though, especially for you, Jeff. Where are you from?
It is. I'm from Detroit.
Okay.
Detroit, Michigan.
Obviously, grew up a Stone Temple Pilot fan.
If you're
a rocker of our age, you're familiar you're familiar with STP.
Yes, yes. We were actually just talking about some of the things we grew up listening to, and obviously, I was around 16 years old when Core came out, but that was right when I was starting to put my own bands together and do my own stuff. You know, like I was in high school and we were putting together things that we could play shows to pay for prom, and you know what I mean, because they would let us use the gym you know, and the whole journey is just, it helped me get to this point, and I've had my close calls with you know, record labels, and I've gotten signed, and you know,
very unforgiving business.
It is but fallen out of love with music completely, just because I was so tarnished by the business side of it that I had to remember why I started to begin with, and to ended up going on TV on a singing show, and just because I was 36.
And is that what happened? Because I know that came from something along those lines.
Well, because I had been on a hiatus from the music industry. I wasn't interested. You know what
you
I mean?
Sick of it.
Yeah, I was just tired of the, you know, I mean, as an artist, you know, you start taking offense to some things eventually, but you know, and the business side, because it's an art form, you know, and I'm a sensitive guy, so I took it to heart, and then, you know, it's a process of being able to let all those things go, and the process of moving forward with my life, and not carrying baggage with me, and which is another thing that I learned when I was on TV from Kelly Rowland was my
mentor. Show was it?
X Factor.
X Factor.
I figured, you know what, I was 36 and I'd been away, so I'm like, you know what, how do you make the biggest splash, you know? And I'd never really been a big fan of those shows because people stand in line for a day and they get their shot, where, you know, I'm doing it for 25 years at that point. But I'm like, what other way to go do it? And just go be like, hey, I'm a singer. This is what we look like. You know what I mean? Like, and kind of like
so
do it.
You know? You say 36. I'm like, dude, I would have guessed you were 25.
I'm 41 now.
Wow. So, yeah. You don't look it at all.
Thank you.
But isn't that kind of old to be an old? We're all around the same age. But to be on that show, isn't it more for like, you know, 21?
But there's no age limit on that show.
Okay.
And the grand prize was $5 million contract. So I mean,
$5 million.
The first time I went on it, yeah. So I was like, well, of course I'm going to go do that. You know what I mean? Because what other ways to get your name out there right away? And all those things led me down this path. So I have experience with the television side of it and doing all those things. But all those things led me to this path of STP now. And hey, you're going to go in the studio and you're going to write a record. You're going to do all these things with this band. And I've done all those things in so many different levels leading up to this point that it was. Yeah. It was all like made. It was like my life was tailor made for this moment. But it was all disappointments in my life. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's all how I chose to look at them, and the fact that I'm 41 and I'm still here doing this. And it was a thing when there was
41 year old overnight sensation.
Yeah, when there was no guarantee. You know, I was even at 41, there was no guarantee, and it was still the mindset I had when I was 20 when I first moved out to Los Angeles.
You know what's interesting too, though, like. You're talking about kind of like the last chance, you know, I'm just going to give it a shot. The Steel Panther is like that as well. Guys that have been around LA.
We used to play with those guys in my old band.
Yeah, dude, in 1995 playing at the Coconut Club with this Van Halen tribute. Right. And they decided, just forget it. We're just going to have fun from now on. We'll put together this fun band. Yeah. And now they're headlining arenas. You just never know what's going to happen.
They're sweet guys too.
Yeah, great guys.
Really, really great guys. And actually, they gave me a chance to listen to their original music, and it's great. Mm-hmm. They're great songwriters.
So catchy, yeah.
Yeah, they're great songwriters.
But the thing about them too, and I'm sure it's the same with you, Jeff, they understand how rare it is to get to that point, and they're not assholes about it. Like,
no.
For you to get this gig, after all, you're going to appreciate it.
It's all about keeping it, taking all the negative stuff that has happened in your life and turning it around and making it into something positive, you know? If you let the negative stuff tear you down, then they just think those things become excuses, you know?
Yeah.
And you got to find ways to get over those things and really use them to your advantage to make something beautiful.
Well, so, it's not the easiest thing to try to make it in music. You know what I mean? It's like
what is that?
But you understand that too, Robert. We're talking about having two singers that are gone now and still be a huge band. I mean, that's to get to the Stone Temple Pilots point, and then all the stuff you've been through, and still be a big band. Yeah. That's rare too.
Well, you know, I think a lot of that is song power. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think the main thing, and this is something that. You know, Scott and I shared back in the 80s when I first met him, is writing the best songs that you can. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really what is memorable in people's minds, because I always look at it this way. I'm a huge fan of music. I'll always be a huge fan of music. There's people that I look up to. And, you know, those songs, I know what they do to me. Mm-hmm. So when people say that about my stuff, it's really hard to comprehend, first off. But I know what they mean, because songs can, you know, bring you to a different place in life that is a, you know, a smell or a vision or a memory or, you know,
exactly.
It
triggers memories, right?
Yeah. It's the beauty of music.
So what was your, you and your brother and Eric's mindset after, because were you still working with Chester before he passed away?
So No. He had left the band by then.
So he had left.
Yeah.
And you once again left in this position with not having a singer.
Yeah.
What was your thought process to finally get started again?
You know, We just felt that, you know, there's always going to be a valid excuse to make new music. You know what I mean? As well as the songs that we've written in the past. And once again, you know, it's something we would have never thought of. But in today's day and age, you know, that we live in now, you know, we put out a worldwide thing to get people to audition. It was a worldwide audition.
So it was a worldwide kind of ad.
Yes, it was.
A modern day ad in the back of Village Voice.
No, it was a video. Like, do this, send it to the, and we got 15,000 people, 20,000 people. And, you know, that's the only way you're going to really find out who is out there in the world. We have the web now to, like, access those things. You know what I
right.
mean? Not just show up at a place. It's actually have people audition from the world. Mm-hmm. And there was like 15, 20,000 people that Dean, Eric, and I went through. I mean, personally went through.
Sending in videos?
Sending videos.
And so you personally went through...
Yes.
15,000?
20,000 videos.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, the three
How do you do that?
Well, you know, you can kind of tell when there's a guy in shorts right. sitting in a couch with an acoustic guitar.
Next.
you know what I mean? I don't mean to be...
No, but I mean, obviously you're looking for a certain thing.
There's a certain... And God bless that they, you know, did that they took the time to do it. We're very, very thankful and grateful for that. But, you know, there's a certain thing that, you know, somebody's... putting their iPhone while they're driving. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, how serious? You can kind
right,
of flip,
right, right, right.
You can kind of flip through it and kind of go to the next one.
Yeah.
Kind of knew, you know, we had three or four songs lined up for people to sing to. And, you know, I knew exactly in the video part there where to go to when they started singing. And it was like, yay or nay, mm-hmm. right away. You know what I mean?
Instantly.
Instantly.
So getting rid of the first 10,000 or, you know, 13,000, you know, is probably not
19,000. You know, 19,950 of them, you know.
But I'm saying, so you're paring down to that final 50.
Yeah.
Then that's when it starts probably getting harder.
Well, you know, it was one of those things, too, where when you see someone on video, you know, there's a lot that's to be said about what they really do. But then when some people showed up in person, there were some great people. There were some great singers that showed up. Mm-hmm. Then you could really tell because it's a multifaceted layer of seeing someone, hearing someone, meeting someone, you know, seeing what they're like. And, you know, it's funny cause Jeff didn't even audition for the,
I wasn't a submission.
No.
You weren't even one of the 20,000.
No.
I was out of the country when they did it. So I was doing my own thing. So that was my focus at the time, you know.
Man, if we met you earlier, you would have saved a lot.
Right?
Come on, man.
Yeah.
Jeez, you can be a little bit nicer next time.
Yeah. But
I would
yeah.
sit there from, you know, 2 in the afternoon till 12 at night just going, looking at videos of people like, wow, like now I'm sick of my own songs.
Yeah, you know right. I mean? Do you get to a point, like I know... talking with Billy Sheehan when yeah. they were putting together the David Lee Roth band
yeah.
and Dave left it to Billy and Steve Vai
yeah.
to find out who the drummer was going to be. And they
right.
said the same thing, 500 drummers. And they said, it got so bad. If somebody came in and like complained about anything, oh, the traffic was bad. Bye. What?
Bye.
Oh, the
right.
weather's the shit. See you later. Did
right.
you get to a point where like, I can't, I'm just going to forward if I see anything.
You know, yeah. And you know, but the thing when you got in the room with the person, you know, you thought, you know, they've traveled from different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people came in from England, people came in from Norway, you know, Australia. And, you know, you have to at least show them the consideration of
right.
playing the songs. You know what I mean? You can't just go, hey, I don't like the way you talk.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, go back to Australia. You know what I mean? So it was a matter of...
can tell, too, from talking to you for 15 minutes that you're a pretty nice guy.
Well, we're all nice guys.
You know,
we like to consider, you know...
You have a good heart, so you don't want to insult somebody that came all this way.
No, man, no. You know? I mean, you know, the thing in life that would help a lot of people out is put yourself in other people's positions, mm-hmm. you know? And that's the thing, is treating people like you'd want to be treated. Isn't that like an old saying that
yeah,
kind
right,
of
sure.
still shines through in life, you know what I mean? So... That's really what it is. It's just giving people the consideration.
So you mentioned that you had 20,000 submissions and the guy that you choose didn't even submit. How did you find out about Jeff and get connected, etc.?
How did we do that, Jeff?
I had a couple angles going, but
did you hear about this and put out some feelers?
I'd heard about it like randomly, but I was with like all my team and my people, so it wasn't like I was going to give it a lot of actual consideration at that time, you know. So
were you doing solo stuff?
Yeah, I had my band. We were playing overseas. We were like everywhere, Dubai and.
So when you did
Cairo,
the X Factor, did you win?
No, I came in second.
Gotcha. Okay,
second place, and then and then I became some friends with some people overseas who are like dear family to me now, and I've gone over to Jordan a few times and done all of that, and we played. Started wanting to put a show together over there and turn into a big tour, and then so I was consumed with all of that stuff when they started this, And then when I got back, I heard a song on the radio, and it was, I think it was Interstate Love Song, but don't quote me on that. But yeah. I called up my buddy in New York, who I knew knows everyone, and like I know he can send their manager, whoever their manager is, you know, within 10 minutes he can get a hold of them. So I'm like, I hit him up and was like, hey, did they ever find a singer? And he's like, I'll send him your stuff right now. And
it was funny because I was on tour with the Hollywood Vampires.
Oh, you play with them too.
Yeah.
So Shep is a good friend of mine.
Oh, yeah.
What a great dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a whole other thing. We could talk about that.
Right. Yeah. So, funny enough, we were in Detroit playing
Pine Knob. Pine Knob. DTE. It's called DTE now. Yeah.
It's Pine Knob.
The amphitheater. It's
Pine Knob.
So, we're playing there. And after the show, this guy goes, hey, how's your singer thing going? We did a little meet and greet thing afterwards. And this guy goes, did you find a singer? I said, no. He goes, man, you should check out this guy, Jeff Good. He's from here. And it was like, oh, I will, man. I will. It was really cool. The guy was like, he's great, man. He's been doing it for a long time. He's pro. So that guy, Chris, was talking
Chris,
you up.
Chris, yep.
Yeah, so that was a sign right there, you know, like a...
And you know what? I barely know that guy. I only know him because I went to go see... How I know that guy is I went to go see Sebastian Bach. And he played at this little...
dude,
amphitheater right by my house. and that guy Chris, he's a DJ at a club I have lunch at in Detroit. But then I saw him, and he's like, dude, he used to be in Madam X with Sebastian Bach, like,
oh,
way back in the day.
Chris Godzilla Dolliver. How bad
him.
Is that?
Yes.
Why do I know
that's
that?
Him. That's him.
Godzilla,
that's the dude
air.
That told him about me.
Who would have ever thunk the dude from Madam X connected to the Stone Temple Pilots?
That was right? Chris. Yeah.
That was Chris.
Wow, no kidding. Yeah, that guy used to be in Madam X.
Great guy, sweetheart guy.
Yeah,
and he took a liking to me because he found me to be a talented guy.
Shit.
You know what I mean? He wasn't trying to bullshit
anybody. Killer hair back in the day, too.
He's still got it.
Yeah. He's like, great, man. Great guy.
Things you never thought you'd talk about on the show. This is Madam X. Wow.
Surprised you knew Chris Dolliver was.
For some reason, I just remember his name, Godzilla.
That's
boom.
Wow.
So he's the guy that passed on the name.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So then, did you
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, thanks,
Thank
Chris.
You, Chris.
You're high in high school. Great name. A great tune. I love that tune. So did you call him up for an audition, or what's the process then?
Yeah, we did that, and we got together, and it was like I said, you know, I wouldn't want to be in the position that Jeff's in or anybody like that, because you have to be kind of two-sided with things. You've got to respect the catalog and a 30-year, you know,
lineage legacy
of material and a band being together. But you know, I think what we really wanted to focus on too was moving forward and making a new record and new music. And I think that was that's a lot to ask of anyone, you know, to be able to do that. And Jeff just handled that the best, you know, out of everyone we met with. He just handled that the best. He knew where this was going. We sat down in my studio and we played him some new material we were working on, and you know, melodies and stuff were coming out, and it was like you gotta be able to be on the same page with someone. And we just finished up a record that we're all really proud of. Really proud of this record.
There's so much too about being in a band, because it's not just the player or the musicianship. It's the chemistry, it's the attitude, it's what's it going to be like spending 22 and a half hours on a bus together.
Is this person
going to
drive me nuts?
You know, because I know for our band, we have the band, we've been through a lot of guys, and when one of our guys had to leave for a bit, gosh, it was so hard.
Oh man.
Well, this guy's a great bass player. I know, but it's not Paulie D, it's not the same guy, chemistry,
right.
You know, and that's so important.
Right.
You know, and how do you judge that right away?
Right. No, it takes, I mean, it took 8 months. It took 8 months of silence.
And how do you mean?
We were kind of courting Jeff for 8 months before, you know, almost a year ago.
So were you guys like hanging out and just kind of judging what this guy's going to be like?
Working on things too. I was working in the studio, you know, with them and working on songs and tracks and all that stuff all the time, like not knowing if they were had anyone else but that they were working with at the same but at the same time at the same time I kind of didn't care, you know.
Yeah,
like,
we didn't.
I'm like, I'm just doing, thank you.
Yes,
but I was, you know, I'm just like, I'm just gonna go in there and control what I can and not worry about the rest and do what I'm good at, and the things that I'm good at, you know, they'll pick up on. And
no pressure, man, it was all on you.
Right?
Hey, but is it hard to, like, for example, you got these three guys who've been together for 30 years odd years, who've been through Weiland and Chester and all these ups and downs, and you come in, it's almost three against, not three against one, but like it's hard. Is it hard to kind of like,
I didn't see that
fit in right away?
I know, I didn't see any of that part,
because that's good.
At the end of the day, like it's like kind of like what I'd have to tell myself every time I go up on stage. It's like everyone there wants to be blown away by you, you know, they want to love you. You just have to go out there and give it to them, you know what I mean? And if you do it the right way with the right attitude, they're going to, you know,
right?
So that's kind of how I approach the whole thing. Like, I mean, they need a singer to come in here and be a certain thing and do this and, you know, and really step up. And I'm like, that's just what I'm going to do. I'm just going to put my nose to the grind and make it work, you know.
It's so interesting, too, because it's not like, you know, I don't know, a Journey scenario where Steve Perry is still alive and they just can't get along. I mean, you know, you have to continue the band and continue these songs.
Yeah.
Somebody has to sing them. And it seems like there'd be a lot of goodwill from your fans
hoping
that you found the right guy.
Yeah. You know, I don't know what right means, the right guy. I just think that, you know, Jeff is the guy who can do both things, honor the catalog. And like I said, it's a lot to ask of someone to do that.
It's six records. It's a lot.
It's a lot, right?
They had to go through it all a couple times.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a lot.
It's interesting, too, because like Weiland, I mean, we played a show with him in Shreveport, Louisiana, at some outside festival underneath highway, like a, you know, it's like on the, like underneath the highway area. Yeah. And I watched him play. It was probably about 6 months before he passed away, and he was still Weiland. Like, you know, that guy is one of the greatest frontmen in rock history.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that you have to, you can't replace that, but there's a certain frontman position. You can't just be standing there.
Yeah.
You know, that's another pressure for you as well, Jeff. Do you feel that?
Well, if I see it as pressure, it becomes pressure. But I just don't look at it that way, you know, because I've been on stages, you know, my whole life. Everyone thinks that I'm new, but I've been doing this a really long time. So it's like, I just rely on my experience and what, you know, I don't really think about that. You know what I mean? I just try to, I try to get into the song as much as I
you just
possibly
do your gig.
Can. And
I mean, if I thought about it too much, I probably wouldn't be doing it. You know what I mean? If I had to think myself right out of it.
What did you find about Weiland as a performer, like on the positive side of things? Like I said, a great front man. What was it about him?
Scott, you know, he worked at that. He worked at that, you know, because when we first met, he was a completely different build. You know, he was...
Really?
Yeah, he was kind of a more of a jock football player kind of guy, I think by the third record he really figured out what he wanted to be, and that was you know, I think we all do it as musicians. You know, we kind of study the past and we kind of go through and see what we like about certain things. And you know, being a bass player, I love Motown and R&B. That's kind of where I pick up that, and that leads into, you know, watching James Brown dance, and I want to incorporate that.
Right.
You know, it's all these things that you pick up along the way. And Scott wasn't really hip to a lot of 70s music. He kind of, when we first met, I still had long hair and kind of going through my T-Rex and Aerosmith phase still, Led Zeppelin, and, you know, heavily. And you know, he used to, you know, say, man, you're so 70s. And I said, man, you should listen to like Led Zeppelin and listen to this and listen to that and Bowie, and all these things kind of came together. And I think as he picked that up, he realized, you know, what he wanted to be, you know, and it was a combination of a lot of different things, you know, and he learned how to be that person, because he wasn't that when we first started out. And, you know, coming out of the era that was considered grunge, you know, I don't think... You know, it wasn't fashionable. You know, that era was a total, you know, backlash of you know, from hair
80s
bands.
Glam metal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I look at the 80s stuff and I go, well, there's people that you know could play.
Absolutely.
There's people that could play.
Yeah.
No matter what they were wearing or what they looked like, There were people that could play. Mm-hmm. And that's my lack of prejudice towards any kind of music. I love all music. Mm. I love all music. I don't put any music down. Once you start putting music down, it's like my whole thing is learn how to play it and then judge it. You know what I mean? Don't judge music if you don't know how to play it. You know what I mean?
Totally.
But I love all kinds of music. And I worked on the Sunset Strip, you know, before we got signed. And
did you?
Yeah, I did. I worked at Mesa Boogie.
No
kidding. Worked at Mesa Boogie for 5 years.
Wow.
And I saw a lot of bands come and go, and it gave me a blueprint of, you know, how to and how not to treat people. Mm. You know what I mean? And that's what I learned from being there. There were a lot of bands that came in and were so caught up in L.A. and being a big thing in L.A. And I just thought if, you know, Scott worked across the street. He used to drive models to the shoot. And he had this big, old 60s Lincoln. It was beautiful. It was like a cream puff car he got from some old, it was like an old lady car. And he was driving models around in this big old Lincoln. But he would call me up or come over and go, man, I got this idea. You know, put something to this. And that's how we kind of wrote Core, was from, you know, working catty corner across the street from each other.
That's cool.
But you know, when you get into that scenario where you're making your first record and the record does well, and you know, you're moving on to your second record, I mean, there's really no time to really think about things. Mm-hmm. You're doing. Mm-hmm. You're doing, and sometimes you're doing things that you shouldn't be doing, and sometimes you're doing things you should be doing. But it's ultimately like joining the circus. There's not a lot of reality in what we do.
Who was the hot band on the strip when you were working at Mesa Boogie?
Oh God, so that must have been like 87. So like Guns N' Roses and Poison and
right, those bands.
Yeah.
Was there any bands that never made it that were hot that you remember?
Bang Tango.
They kind of had a little bit of cup of coffee, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny you should say Bang Tango, because the first time when I ever got discovered and how I got into Dry Cell to begin with was because I was playing at a club in Detroit and the singer from Bang Tango walked in, Joe Lestay,
really?
And is like, dude, I know this band looking for a singer, because they were just signed to this.
Oh, man. Man.
Dude, you get those glam metal guys helped you out a lot, dude.
Right?
Lots of them. I was a guitar player back then, so I was into that stuff.
Who were your influences as a singer when you were growing up?
Oh, man. Well, obviously Sebastian Bach, who was like, because of the power and range
of his
vocal,
singer,
man.
To this day.
To this day,
he's never lost a step.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, then it goes into like the people who have like the tone, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like Bob Seger and Joe Cocker, and from everything from that to like Neil Diamond, and people that where you just know that their voice as soon as you hear it, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? The timbre in their voice, and like, because those are the hardest things. Those, you can never emulate that stuff. You just have to be born with that, you know? So that's why I hold those things the most sacred, you know? Mm-hmm. But obviously like a Sebastian Bach, I learned how to sing because I was out at my dad's house every weekend. And I had the house to myself, so I would turn on Wasted Time by Sebastian, on Slave of the Grind.
Yep.
And I sang that song probably 10,000 times until I had it perfect. You know what I mean? And I can't even sing it anymore. But
it's got such range from the low
and the beauty and the control and all. And I could hear well, so I could know if I was emulating it well or not. But I got pretty close.
Well, that's the beauty of music, you know. It's the gift that keeps on giving, you know. Because he, I would imagine, learned a lot from Halford.
Sure.
Oh yeah.
And that, and who Halford learned, and that's
great call.
That's kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the gift that keeps on giving. That's the beauty of music, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just read Bruce Dickinson's book, and he said that when he was starting, it was Ian Gillan from Deep Purple, The Crazy World of Arthur Brown.
Oh man.
Song Fire.
Fire.
Oh, and then the other one was, he said, Ronnie James Dio, and I never heard that in his voice until he mentioned it. There's a lot of Dio in Bruce's voice.
Yeah.
But just, I like to hear like those, because you're like, oh, I hear it now.
Absolutely.
I never noticed it before, you know?
So Arthur, what was his name?
Arthur Brown. The crazy world of Arthur Brown. And he wore all like the costumes and the gimmicks.
A tripper, man.
Yeah.
He was a tripper back then. He was doing stuff in like 68 that no one was doing.
Right.
Putting makeup on, like kind of pre-Alice Cooper.
Yeah, all the kind of the big costumes and all that sort of thing. As you can see, Bruce has a little bit of that in there as well, you know?
Fire.
Fire.
That's a crazy song. Yeah. The God of Hellfire.
That's the one. That's the one. I was listening to Meadow. You know what's funny? Let me go back a little bit. I was listening to the radio the other day, and I heard this song, and I knew that you guys had a new song, but I hadn't heard it yet. Hadn't heard the new singer. I said, that's got to be the new Stone Temple Pilots song. It's just so Stone Temple Pilots. Oh, wow. It's like a classic, you know, tune with the melody line and everything, and your voice fits perfectly. It's not a Weiland clone, but there's a little Weiland in there, but it's a lot of your own too, which is, I think, pretty good.
He had a lot of influence on me too, as well as, like, you know, the people that influenced him, like Jim Morrison and David Bowie, and it goes all the way back to the Carpenters and all this, like, all the stuff that I my dad's record collection, you know, it's like, all that stuff is like, I can hear all that stuff in his delivery, and so it's been a big part of my journey too.
Yeah. You know, what was interesting is when Scott and I would write a song, you know, I would usually, when I wrote a piece of music, I would have a melody with it. Songs like Interstate Love Song, and, you know, sometimes if I had a melody, I would, you know, go to Scott and say, check out this melody, and he's like, that's exactly the melody I had. Mm-hmm. So we shared a lot of that, and we kind of passed that on to Jeff once in a while, like, hey, check out this melody. Yep. And it really is kind of a Stone Temple Pilots melody. Who came up with that?
Yeah. Is that yours? Yeah. I mean, it's very Stone Temple influence.
A lot of it was done so, like, quick, and, like, because, like some of the melody stuff early on was done, like, really fast, because I was just like, boom, 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 let me get them.
We were still trying them out.
I was trying to get in as many as I could.
And if you didn't last, they would have kept your melody,
you know,
though.
Right?
That's ours now.
He put down, what'd you put, five or six?
Six songs in one night, the first night.
I was like, all right, this guy,
And a lot of those were like, you would go back and be like, dude, listen to the melody I had for that. And it was like almost exactly the same. And it was because I didn't want to be like,
same thing,
a couple times it'd be like, you know, I'm like, no, I don't want to hear anything until I just want a fresh boot. You know what I mean? A fresh time at it, you know. Sometimes I'd be like, what'd you guys have?
But like I said, it's perfect, and it's really good to hear, because I'm sure it's exciting for you, for both of you guys, but, like, you know, when you get a new band member, especially a new singer, and you know it's the right guy, like, you're probably thinking, oh my gosh, this is so great.
Yes,
that feeling.
Yes, finally back on the horse again.
Let's talk a little bit about Chester. How did you it was an interesting choice to bring him in, but it really fit. How did you decide to work with him?
You know, Chester always kind of said he was a, you know, I hate to use the word fan, I hate that word, but, you know, he grew up on our music. He told us later on, you know, he came to some of our first shows when he was a kid. And, you know, at the time when things had gotten weird with Scott, you know, we were looking for someone to, I don't know if go out and tour was the whole thing. I think it was a whole thing that Chester brought. He brought a vibe, a really great vibe to this band. Chester's one of those people that he was always in the solving something. He was never complaining about something. He was always saying, you know, let's just go out and kick ass. You know, it wasn't like, if we do this, you know, he never was like that. It was like always in the solving the problem. And, you know, just having that positive vibe. Let's face it, he really didn't have to do SDP. He was doing fine with Linkin Park. You know, he really didn't have to do it, but it was something that he wanted to do. And he gave that all he could. And we admired him for that, because there were times where, you know, we were like, I wish we could tour more, but he couldn't. Mm-hmm. He couldn't with what he had going on. But that guy just brought, you know, he just brought such a great vibe to our world at the time when we needed that. We really, really needed that at the time. Things were not good around that time. Mm-hmm. And just what he brought, like I said, not only vocally, but just vibe-wise. You know, I miss that guy.
It's like you said, he didn't have to do it, but it's the same of just Axl Rose singing with AC/DC popped in my head.
Right.
You don't have to do it, but, like, we're all fans of something.
Right.
And to get that opportunity, like, are you kidding me? I can sing with STP, I'm in.
Absolutely.
No matter what it takes, I'll do it.
And on that note, it was really fun for all of us.
Yeah.
You know, it was really fun for all of us.
I'm sure
Axl. Yeah. And I'm sure Axl sang the AC/DC stuff great.
Amazing.
You know, great.
So good.
Yeah.
Were you surprised at Chester's passing? Or did you have
Absolutely.
Did you have inclinations that
No.
It's unbelievable, right? That people you never know. I had a friend of mine that did the same thing. You never would have guessed it, not in a million years. You know,
someone once said, you know, we all have a battle inside that no one else knows about. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we all have that battle inside that no one knows about. And I just remember, you know, every time we lived in the same town together.
Okay.
So we brought our kids to school. You know, it was more of a community thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, at our son's baseball games, and you know, and he just, you know, he always had a hug and a kiss for mm-hmm. me, you know what I mean? And it was like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I
mean? That's what you remember for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned something earlier. I wanted to ask you about your opinion on, and I've talked to Billy Corgan about this, and you're talking about grunge. And what exactly does that even mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
Why was that? What was it, in your opinion?
I think that was a way for record companies to market a new thing that they could make money off of. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think a lot of bands got caught up in that. You know, but one thing I can say is there was some really valid, great music that came out of that.
Absolutely.
It definitely stood on its own without being called grunge. I didn't even know what grunge was. You know, I didn't even know what it was. The people that were already signed, I didn't really know about them. I got to say, I don't listen to a lot of new music. I mean, I actually listen to jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz has always been kind of a thing for me.
Motown.
Yeah, said, Motown and stuff. But I just, you know, when you get signed to a record label and, you know, they want you to be in a certain movement, there's not a lot you can really do about that. But you have to, you know, one thing we did get straight with Atlantic Records is we did want full control over anything we did creative. And when we made those records, there was no one from Atlantic Records there. They got the record and they were like, great. Mm-hmm. And they gave us, and that's what was great about Atlantic Records. They did give us full control creatively. And that was the main thing we wanted. But overall, I mean, I wish there was more camaraderie in the bands of those days. I mean, it almost seemed like everyone was just a little snobbish about, you know, the music they were making. And there was no, because I go back to 60s and 70s and there were, you know, Joe Cocker's doing the Beatles. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about that concept and who would be doing that now?
Like a year after it came out.
Yeah.
You know what
or
I mean?
Hendrix,
yeah.
Hendrix goes to England
along
does Sgt. Pepper.
So Sgt. Pepper and Along the Watchtower as well. Yeah, does Sgt. Pepper the weekend it comes out.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's camaraderie.
Right.
And that's respect. That doesn't really exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that I don't, you know, Billy Corgan, I love Smashing Pumpkins. Mm-hmm. Great, great band. And Billy's very, very talented.
Absolutely.
Individual.
Because what he said, we didn't know grunge. I was just playing a derivative of Black Sabbath.
We were doing Zeppelin and,
right.
and you know, Motown and all these things. I didn't get into music to be a, you know, a part of the scene.
That's
I was
right.
Just carrying on what we learned.
You just kind of got lumped, like we're talking about Skid Row. Like Skid Row was called a hair metal band. Well, they were a band
like
that had hair,
or something, yeah.
But they were also super heavy, at least from Slave to the Grind.
Well, a lot of that, it's like, for me, because I've had to study music and do all of that, like trying to figure out how to make it, you know what I mean? Mm. Whatever that is. But as a fan sitting from the outside, like to me, like the glam thing kind of created the grunge thing had to happen because the glam thing was just, it was all about fun and partying and the glitz and the glam. And then when the quote unquote grunge came out, it was really real and really raw. And I think there was something about that really attracted people to that. We're dealing with real problems and weren't trying to, you know, it wasn't all about partying. You know what I mean?
Well, it had to cleanse the palate too with no more of the costumes and the hair and it was just too much.
But like everything gets, then that's what everyone's doing and that's what everyone has to do.
Just jumps on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
I was going through a very big, like, slick back hair, long side.
I remember, yeah.
Vintage clothes with wingtips. And, you know, I just, and then I'd hear grunge and I'd think, you know, I'm the furthest thing from grunge, man.
Stylish,
I just wanted to, you know, go out and represent myself as, and that was, you know, adding little pieces of what I learned over the years and how I wanted to present myself.
Well, yeah, even I remember Weiland wore like a suit and tie on stage sometimes.
Yeah,
like you guys did not have that look at all.
No,
just dumped
really,
in that category.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, that's how. You know, it is called the music business,
mm-hmm.
and that's the part of the business, you know, because I forget who said that, you know, if there wasn't any music with the business, it would be great. And the same goes for if there wasn't any business with the music.
Who said it?
Geffen said that, right?
Yeah. David Geffen?
David Geffen said that.
He said, so if there wasn't any music...
If there wasn't any musicians, the music in this industry would be great.
Typical suit on the other side, right?
Or artists or something.
Did you see that documentary?
It was a documentary. Yeah.
That's a great documentary.
On David Geffen?
Amazing.
I haven't seen it.
Amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
Great. Interesting to check out for sure.
Great documentary on him. PBS documentary, right?
I think it was part of another band's documentary.
Oh no, he has his own documentary out.
It was part of the Eagles? It was part of the Eagles. It was in the Eagles documentary.
It was in the Eagles documentary.
Yeah, because Geffen and Eagles had a big issue, didn't they?
Yes.
Right.
But it was Glenn Frey saying that he said it.
Jackson Brown hooked him up.
Yeah.
And then Geffen gave them back their publishing.
Oh, after he gave it back to Jackson Brown and not them. They were pissed.
Business, right? Right, exactly.
Yeah. But there is a Geffen documentary that's incredible.
I'm going to see that one.
Yeah. Check it out. Incredible. Did you ever see Stone Temple Pilots? I was going to ask you earlier when
I wasn't really a big concert guy.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I would love to watch them on TV, like concerts on TV whenever they were on, just because I can't stand that. I'd get claustrophobic.
Me neither, man.
Drives me nuts, man.
I know. When I'm on stage, I'm like, I'm so glad I'm up here.
Yes.
I know. I don't want to be out there.
It does kind of warp you. Like, I can't go to a festival anymore.
No.
Because I have to be, like, they asked me when they had the old cello, like the Stones and Beatles. Like, are you going to go? Like,
yeah.
I can't go stand in the crowd.
You have anxiety. And
I don't know anybody
like,
backstage.
I'd be nuts.
McCartney's not going to give me a pass, so I'm not going.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard.
And then you got people from up in hotel rooms shooting people.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's just a horrible thing, you know?
Yeah.
We've actually played that exact stage.
Yeah.
I can visualize seeing Mandalay Bay. It's right over to your right up there. You know, it's just, you have the Bataclan thing with the Eagles of Death Metal and the thing that happened was it Selena Gomez
Ariana Grande.
Ariana Grande. If you're talking about, some of these great things that you've done, Robert, and you mentioned playing with the Hollywood Vampires, tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, man, that was fun. It was really fun. Really fun.
What a great group of guys.
Yeah, it's really, really a fun time. I mean... How'd
you get involved in that?
I just got asked. You know, Joe Perry and Dean and I will be playing in Joe Perry's band next month.
Oh, he's doing like a solo thing?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
A couple shows.
And, how is that for you? Like, oh, you're playing with Joe Perry, and I think you opened for Kiss before.
Oh, you know, it's like I said, being a fan of music still.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's an incredible feeling for me. It's such an honor because these are people. There's one thing I say to a few people, and when I meet people like that, I have to say thank you for raising me, because they did.
Yeah.
They raised me.
Yeah.
And you know, Alice Cooper, it's very surreal being up on stage doing 18 and looking over and seeing Alice Cooper, who is still sounding amazing. Still. Yeah. I can't believe how good he is still. Yeah. He's really that good.
And another one of the nicest guys you could ever meet.
Amazing, amazing, down-to-earth, sweetheart guy.
How is it being in the band with Johnny Depp?
Great.
Yeah.
Johnny's
a good player.
He's a great player, and he's a sweetheart person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he really has a great heart. Really, really great guy to hang around with. He's really a sweet guy.
It's funny. Alice was telling me that they have like the VIPs, the meet and greets. And he said, so it's Joe Perry and Alice Cooper and Johnny Depp. And he said,
they go right by. Yeah.
90% of the people just walk right by Alice and Joe.
It's amazing because we would be playing a hotel, like a casino type thing. And, you know, when you're down in the dressing room and there's, you know, you get a guy come in with the cart, the room service cart, and he's bringing you water. It's usually some old dude, you know, because Johnny's there. It's like four girls that come down with the cart. And you're like, did you really need four girls to bring that down? I remember we landed in Sweden and, you know, we came down off the plane and they had the stairs that came up, the metal stairs that came up to the plane. And, you know, it's usually two dudes down there, right? Here we are in Sweden. We arrive at like 10 in the morning, and there's two girls, two blonde Swedish girls down there who I don't know who they asked. Like, can we go there and see Johnny Depp?
Right.
Because that's really what it was all about.
You know, it's like we all have some level of notoriety and some level of fame, and, you know, you get some autographs and some pictures, but you get a guy like that, that's a whole different level.
Oh, man.
Of
but,
everything.
You know, he doesn't really carry that around with him, and I really respect that in him. He's a sweetheart. Really, really love Johnny.
I hosted an award show actually here at the Nokia Theater a couple of years ago, and Johnny showed up to play guitar with Marilyn Manson. Mm-hmm. And Slash and I were sharing a dressing room, and so Slash said, hey, come upstairs, let's go to Johnny's dressing room. I'm like, yeah, sure, I had to do something, but I'll meet you up there. I go up there, and there's a big giant bodyguard, and he's standing there. I'm like, hey, I'm just gonna go. He's like, I understand, but I can't let you in. I'm like, but Slash is in there, and he's invited me. I understand, but he said I could come in. I understand. But I just want to go. All he kept saying was, I understand. And basically, like, fuck off, kid.
Right.
It's like, you can hang out with anybody here, but not him.
He's in the room by himself, saying.
Yeah. Are you going to do more stuff with them?
I think so. I mean, this is kind of the first thing that we, you know, there were some things that I had to kind of, you know, switch around this year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the main focus here is STD.
Of course.
But I hope so. You know, I hope so. It was really a fun mm-hmm. thing to do. Really was. It's when you're with Johnny, you travel well. You know what I mean? It's really, really nice. And you know, he's very you know, gracious. Very gracious person.
That's cool, yeah. Man. It's yeah. good experience. Just as we wind down here, so you mentioned the focus is Stone Temple Pilots. You're going out on tour. It looks like a short tour. I'm assuming is that just a warm up run? Or?
It's a warm up run because we got to remember how to do this.
Yeah. Have you guys done a show yet?
We did one show.
Oh, like at the Roxy or
we
something.
We did a Troubadour. Yeah.
So how was that, Jeff?
It was great, man.
Yeah.
Recorded live. You know, like hey, no pressure. But
yeah, what did you go ahead?
So we. So the first show, it was live on Sirius XM. So the first show.
No pressure, right?
No pressure.
But dude, you're cool. So here's another thing I like about it too. It's like when Rob Trujillo joined Metallica, it's a guy who'd been around similar age.
Yes.
So important. You guys are similar age. You've been around, you're cool, man. Like I can tell you're like, you understand the importance of the gig and you respect it, but you're not like, you're like, fuck, dude, let me just do my thing.
Well, it's like certain, it's crazy because like I said, like I didn't feel like everything in my life has brought me to this moment, but if I would have made it when I was younger, you know.
Oh man! Right.
You know, who knows? Who knows if I'd even be alive today? You know what I mean? And I don't mean to sound bad by saying that, but I think about those kind of things. You know, I was interested in all the wrong things back then, and now it's like about my son and about making music and about doing what keeping it what I love about music. Yeah. You know what I mean? And not getting too into the other things that don't really matter as much. So I just keep my focus on that. And
I'm going to remember he said that.
Okay? I got it on tape. I got it recorded.
You got proof,
here.
Right?
How old am I? I got it on tape. I got it digitally recorded. What was the first song? What did you guys open with that night at the Troubadour?
Down. It was Down.
It's so the first song you ever officially sang nice live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great because, you know, it was still a secret. And we kept that secret.
Everyone was wondering who the singer was going to be.
Right. So we had him have one of those "Hello, my name is" stickers on, which was great. So. Yeah.
Did you consider bringing in anybody with name? Like, not that you didn't have a name, Jeff. I don't mean that disrespectfully, but somebody like of a bigger name value.
You know, I don't know if we put that much thought into it. I think maybe doing that would have colored it in a certain direction.
Right.
You know, because I think the bigger you are, the more personality you have towards what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's you know what I mean? So
I a lot of baggage comes with it.
Kind of, yeah. You know, kind of. And it sets a certain example up in the public's mind.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And, you know, it's nice that this is an open thing and we've, you know, done the record, you know, that we wanted to do. Really proud of this record.
It's so cool to see though, because at first, not at first, but you're talking about the music competition shows like Idol and X Factor. Yep. And now it's like there's a lot of great singers, like, you know, Adam Lambert fronting Queen. I saw that gig. It was amazing.
Well, good for them, man. Oh, because dude, I mean,
absolutely,
the world, this is how I look at it. People should really cherish the people that are still around, because we're not going to be around forever.
I agree so
you know
much.
What I mean? There's a lot of stuff about this and that, and there's, man, isn't there enough negativity in the world? You know what I mean? People should enjoy, you know, the people that are here still, and appreciate that. Because, man, I want to hear Queen songs being played live. There's some, you know, that's the milk in the bottle of music that I grew up on.
They raised you too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
it was so good too. Like to me, like when people complain, if you're talking about, like, we mentioned Axl and Guns N' Roses, like the world is better with AC/DC in it.
Yes.
Than with AC/DC not in it. And I don't give a shit if it's Axl and Angus and the three of us. Like who? It doesn't matter. Just play the songs and just enjoy the fact they're still doing it. You know.
Thank you.
Right. I agree with that.
Absolutely. So. That's kind of how I look at Queen. I mean, you know, good for Brian and good for Roger. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they should be doing it still.
Right.
You know what I mean? They earned it. They earned it. They earned to be able to do those songs. And, you know, obviously people are enjoying those songs.
Well, so. Adam does a great job, too.
Yeah.
You know, plus
yeah.
he's flamboyant like Fred. Well, yes, so it really works.
Absolutely.
You know, and I can see, like, that's why, like we said, it's better to have them than not have them.
Absolutely.
And it's the same thing with Stone Temple with Jeff. So the record comes out, then you're going to go on tour. What's your goal overall for, what's your mission statement?
Don't fuck up is number one. I have it tattooed across the inside of my eyelids.
Was there any hazing for the new kid when
he
came in?
No, man. Full respect.
Yeah.
Full respect.
Yeah. I kind of gave him a little background on my past, so they're probably like, man, this guy's been through enough.
Right? Just leave him alone, please.
Yeah.
Last question for you. What's your favorite song to play live? And same with you, Jeff.
Oh, man. I mean, there's so many of them. I mean, you know, it's... I think when STP got together, and still what we're doing now is trying to, you know, write songs and record songs that will come across the best live. Mm. And I think that was always the mentality of, is, you know, there's something about getting in front of people and performing music and seeing the look in people's faces and that energy. And, you know, I think as far as energy goes and what Jeff is performing, one of the songs he's performing really great. I mean, they all sound great, but would be Piece of Pie.
I was going to say the same one. I was going to be the same one I said too.
Wow, yeah. You got that one, huh?
Well, it was the first song I did with you guys when I first auditioned the very first time because I didn't know the lyrics very well. So I was like, hey, can we do that one first? And then they were like, why, you want to do that one first? It's the hardest one to sing. I was like, I didn't tell him why.
Reading.
I'm like, well, I could
wrote
sing
the lyrics
it's
just about your hand.
I'm trying to remember it so I don't look like an idiot.
You need one of those teleprompters that everybody has now.
Right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Well, the rest of them I had played for years in cover bands and different projects. So especially like something like Tripping on a Hole, it's like I felt so comfortable in it because if I had to learn it, I would have been like, oh my God, there's so many lyrics in this song.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
How am I ever going to get this? And that within the however many weeks I have to learn it. But instead it was just like, oh, I've done that one forever. So I didn't know.
You know, so I had forgotten about that song and I heard it on the radio once the other day. Gosh, you guys, that's such a great tune. You guys have so many great tunes that you forget because everyone talks about Interstate Love Song. But it's Tripping
on
the
I forget them too, Chris.
Vaseline, yeah. You remember how to play them, kid?
I forget them too, man.
Well, congratulations, guys.
Thank
it's
you.
Exciting and I'm happy for you guys. For
appreciate
sure.
It,
thank you, man. All right. Thank you.
All right, the new self-titled Stone Temple Pilots album is out on Friday. Get it on iTunes, Amazon. Listen to it on Spotify. If you heard Allison Hagendorf talk about Spotify the other day on Talk is Jericho, great podcast there. Wherever you buy records, wherever you listen to music, go check it out and go see them live if you ever get a chance. They're a great rock and roll band. I know Weiland is one of the best frontmen in rock and roll, but Jeff is pretty damn good as well. You should see it for yourself. Their tour kicks off May 1st in Atlanta, Georgia at the Masquerade and rolls through the beginning of June. You can get tickets at stonetemplepilots.com. And speaking of great live shows, come see the Judas Rising Tour 2018 with Fozzy, Through Fire, Santa Cruz, Dark Sky Choir. We are in Portland tomorrow night, March 15th at Dante's. This is after we sold out the Whiskey A Go-Go in Los Angeles. We sold out Counts Vamped in Las Vegas. The tour has been going so great. Seattle, Washington on the 16th, and then we take a little break before we start up again. March 27th in Milwaukee at the Turner Ballroom. March 28th, Chicago at Bottom Lounge. March 29th, Grand Rapids at the Intersection. March 30th, Detroit at the Shelter. March 31st, Dayton, Ohio at the Rockstar Arena. That is sold out. April 2nd in Cleveland. April 3rd, Pittsburgh at Jurgles. April 4th, Clifton Park at the Upstate Concert Hall. April 5th, New York at the Gramercy Theater. That one's going to sell out very quickly. April 6th, Philly at the Foundry. That one's going to sell out quickly. April 7th, Portland, Maine at Aura, and April 8th, Hampton Beach at Wally's. Remember, you can come see the Fozzy Show and then watch WrestleMania with me afterwards. We're playing early at 5. We'll be finished around 7, just as WrestleMania begins. So come to the show and then come hang out and watch WrestleMania with me. You can get tickets at FozzyRock.com. Come join us for the VIP meet and greet as well. We do one of the best meet and greets in the business. We'll give you a little mini concert. We play 5 or 6 tunes, take pictures, and do all that other stuff too. It's a lot of fun. Those are selling out as well. So please go to FozzyRock.com to check it out. And Words of Jericho coming back to the UK in the spring, May 21st, Glasgow, May 22nd, Manchester, May 23rd, London. Get your tickets at insidetheropes.co.uk. Manchester is already sold out. And of course, not too late to come hang with Fozzy and me on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. We leave October 27th from Miami to the Bahamas. $150 holds your cabin. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And once you book your cabin, everything is free. All-inclusive concerts, comedy shows, live podcasts, meet and greets, autograph signings, the Ring of Honor, Sea of Honor tournament, all-inclusive. Includes your food as well. And you'll be able to hang with everybody. Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, SoCal Val, Special Cruise Director, Mick Foley, Raven, Ricky the Dragon, Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, the Keepin' It 100 crew with Conan, Disco Inferno, Shane Helms, Beyond the Darkness, scaring the crap out of you with Dave and Tim, Colt Cabana, Marty DeRosa doing the Unprofessional Wrestling Show, that's hilarious, Don Callis and Paul Lazenby doing Kill in the Town, Brad Williams, Ron Funches, Busted Open Radio is going to be there, Dave LaGreca, Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, King, The Stir, Cherry Bombs, Shoot the Thrill, the world's best AC/DC cover band, Blizzard of Ozzy, world's best Ozzy cover band, and of course, Ring of Honor presenting the Sea of Honor tournament aboard the ship. Matches happening live on the boat in the middle of the ocean, and the winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Championship title shot in the future. Kenny Omega will be there, and in the tournament, the Young Bucks, Marty Scurll, Briscoe Brothers, Dalton Castle, Frankie Kazarian, Adam Page, Chris Daniels, Jay Lethal, Delirious, Cody Rhodes, Brandi Rhodes, more names to be announced soon, so go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and get your cabin now. All right, coming up on Friday, he's the most controversial name in the pro wrestling business right now. Sami Callihan is going to be here, and he is pissed off at the world. You're going to hear that this Friday on Talk is Jericho. Until then, in the meantime, and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy!